And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. And as my producer Tom reminded me, these tickets that I have for the Black Widows football game are for this Sunday, and he had a nice little quote here. He says that the folks will be looking for baskets on Easter Sunday, not sacks. But if you do want to see the football game, I've got four tickets for the Black Widows, which is the female football league right here in Ventura County, for this Saturday, April 23rd at 1 o'clock up in Newberry Park, and I'll be giving those tickets away to the third caller who calls us at 639-0008. Every show's got a theme, and today's theme is taking action. We're learning lessons from each of my guests about taking actions in one form or another. My first guest is a groundbreaking consultant and author of 5 best-selling books on empowerment for men and women. We discussed actions you can take to get respect and lead the successful life that you've always wanted. My second guest is a journalist who's written for the National Review, Wall Street Journal, and many other publications. We looked at violence in football at the turn of the 20th century, and he told us how President Theodore Roosevelt took action to save the game from his book titled The Big Scrum. My next guest is a youthful, determined evangelist for taking action. He works with leaders around the world to flip their thinking, to help them find opportunities where others cannot, and to create innovative approaches to change. We're going to discuss his latest book, Making It Happen, Turning Good Ideas into Great Results. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Peter Sheehan is the founder and the CEO of Change Labs, which is a global consultancy delivering large-scale behavioral change projects. Peter has worked with some of the world's leading brands in the area of innovation and change. With operations in 3 countries and 9 cities, Peter knows firsthand the pressures of growing and leading a business in the rapidly changing world. Peter is recognized internationally as a leader in business thinking and has advised executives and leaders through his thought leadership practice. He's the author of 6 books. He focuses on teaching leaders and companies how to flip their thinking, make money in the cracks, and find opportunities where others cannot. His latest book is titled Making It Happen, and he unpacks his insights on how to best get leaders and entrepreneurs to execute their good ideas and turn them into profitable results. Peter lives in Colorado with his wife and 2 children, and joining us from Colorado, Peter, how are you doing today?
I'm well, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being our guest here. Now, the world is not short of good ideas. I mean, you know, people out there who know how to come up with good ideas, there's a shortage of people who know how to execute them. I can't tell you the number of times I've looked at something, either a product or a service, and gone, God, I knew that. I should have done something with that. But I didn't. So what's the difference between action-oriented successful leaders and the rest of us?
Well, I think it's probably the answer is in your question, and it's something around the action orientation. But I think it goes a step beyond that, because your listeners would know there's plenty of us out there having a go, as an Australian would say, but not quite getting the results we are looking for. And the purpose of writing Making It Happen is to go that step beyond, go beyond the generation of the idea and go beyond the motivation to get out there and do something and actually unpack the strategies for execution.
Well, the thing that I liked about your book, Peter, was that you identified 5 basic competencies that you need to be successful in here. So let's go through those. What are the 5 basic competencies for translating an idea into action?
Number one is packaging, and that's essentially taking your goal, your aspiration, your idea, and turning it into an offer that the market can buy. Positioning is aligning that offer with an existing market need, or if needs be, moving the market and convincing them that they need it. The third is influence, and that's where we often come unstuck. It's about how do you close the deal when you're one-on-one with the buyer. The fourth is acceleration, and for those entrepreneurs listening, this is often where we leave most money on the table. We don't exploit and get leverage from the momentum and the trust that we've started to build. And then finally, and given the world after the global financial crisis, is this concept of reinvention. When is it a good time to ante up again, take new risks, and quote-unquote get back on the horse?
All right. Now, those are 5 great competencies to have. Just to help clarify it in the minds of my listeners a little bit, if you would, please, let's use an example. Let's use the Dyson vacuum cleaner as an example. Now, go through your 5 steps using a Dyson vacuum cleaner as the focal point for the conversation.
Yeah, well, vacuum cleaners is interesting because there is a lot of product-based innovation in that category. And the question is, despite all the new product, how do you get to market? So let's take Dyson. Dyson comes up with a new model that involves circulating air rather than filtering through some kind of paper material. So clearly, he's servicing an existing need. But instead of just coming and going up this creative new thing, he began to package that idea by directly pointing to the deficiencies of the existing filter model. So that would be under packaging. And then by when he moved on to positioning, he started using demonstrations to just show how many germs, how much dust, how much material was left by traditional vacuum cleaners. So all of a sudden, he gets the audience feeling like, wow, the vacuum cleaner I have is deficient. It doesn't do what I needed to do. So he starts to position the new Dyson model with an existing need. His influence strategy was actually built on his retail strategy. He didn't sell the Dyson through traditional channels. He did two things. One, went to very high-end design-oriented retailers for what he would call, quote-unquote, sophisticated buyers. But he also went with the direct selling model as well because he felt like getting in someone's home was the best way to influence them to buy because he couldn't trust traditional salespeople. So that's the influence model. Acceleration is what he's done since. He took the trust, he took the impact of that original product, and he started to look at what else he could put into that channel. And if you think about the fans that he now has, the bladeless fans, they're just one example of how he starts taking his distribution model and selling more into the category. And as for how Dyson will reinvent into new product areas, I think that story remains untold.
Right. The future will tell us on that. All right. So that helps to clarify it, and I appreciate that. I want to isolate on two things in particular in your five competencies that you have to have. And the first is positioning. Now, a lot of us are in business today. We've got what we think is a position in the marketplace. Maybe it's not serving us. How can we better reposition ourselves if we're in an existing business? And I'm just going to pick a really ordinary business like a tire dealership. How could a tire dealership maybe reposition itself to get a little bit more leverage out of the marketplace?
Yeah, so the challenge you have as a tire dealership is commoditization. Mm-hmm. There's basically no tire you sell that I can't get at Costco or Walmart or any of the other major big box retailers. So the question becomes, if you can't compete on scale, what can you compete on and what can you do better? And you've probably got a few choices. Number one, you could begin to compete on things like service. And in fact, there's a famous tire company in the northwest of the U.S. that has a reputation for running to the car of customers who frequent their stores. So they literally build their point of difference on service. You could start to do very sophisticated tires. So maybe you do European imports, Pirelli brand, things like that, which are more expensive, but for the sports car enthusiast, of which you have no shortage of in Ventura County, anywhere, in fact, anywhere in California.
So true.
So you start to look at how can you get sharp? In other words, how can you get really, really narrow in your offer if you're in a generally, let's not say boring, but let's just say commoditized industry? And then the second thing you've got to build on is once you're getting sharp in your offer, getting narrow, is what can you put around that to make that compelling? What sorts of things could you do to get that message out there? So if you were going for the Pirelli high-end European model as a tire salesperson, maybe you're blogging on Motor Trend blogs. Two, perhaps you're attending local car fairs. Three, maybe you become a member of the local Aston Martin or Ferrari club, and you start to position yourself with the community most likely to buy. So you could pick service, or you could actually pick an even narrower version of your product.
There you go. We're talking to Peter Sheehan, everybody, author of the book, Making It Happen, Turning Good Ideas into Great Results. And Peter, your five basic competencies, packaging, positioning, influence, acceleration, and reinvention. I'm going to put you on the spot. If you had to pick one as being the most important, which of the five is the most important?
Well, being a good old consultant, I'm going to give you two. If you're an early-stage entrepreneur, it's packaging. Get out of the idea and get into the offer. For too long in the early-stage entrepreneurship process, we're all about us. We're all about what we think would be good. At the end of the day, you have to get out of your own head and get into the head of the market. But if you are already in business, I actually think it's acceleration. And acceleration, quite simply, is leverage. How do you get disproportionate returns for your effort? And you know why I think it happens, Bill? I think we get a little bit of success, we get a little bit of market penetration, and we start to get fearful and try to protect that which we've created. And we stop taking the very risks that got us to that position. Now, very quickly, I would suggest that leveraging scale and platform is one of the best ways to build and accelerate those results, to get those disproportionate results. So, for instance, under scale, you could be partnering with distribution partners to get much broader access to the market without you having to do all the capital investment that gets you there. They would be the sorts of things I would say. Packaging if you're early stage, acceleration if you're already on the road.
All right, a true consultant giving me two answers when only one was necessary, so I thank you for that, Peter. But I want to come back to influence, because a lot of people out there are hearing the sound of your voice. They want to know, what role does influence play in selling a product?
Well, it's one thing to convince someone that they need the product. It's another thing to convince them that they need it from you. Just ask any local car salesperson who's shopping with someone, telling them they need a certain brand of car, and then have that same customer come back 15 minutes later with four quotes from out of state. I mean, you've got to convince them that they want to buy it from you. And this starts to happen on a couple of levels. One, you have to understand what are the unconscious motivations of that buyer. And two, you have to understand how you as the seller can present yourself, present your idea, or present your version of that idea or product in such a way that they want to buy. And two really simple ways to think about it, or two strategies that are in making it happen. Number one is the code. People never buy what they say they buy. Let's take business coaching as an example. I know plenty of executives engaged in coaching who are in it either one for therapy or two because they're lonely on the entrepreneurial journey.
Right.
But as a business coach, you can't sell therapy. You have to sell performance. You have to sell revenue growth. You have to sell profitability. Second strategy I would give you would be around this concept of pitching less and pulling more. If you're one-on-one with a buyer trying to influence them to part with time, energy, or money, you don't want them to feel like you're shoving it down their throat. You want to change the dynamic and have them start coming towards you. So occasionally saying no or beginning a process of disqualifying them from the process can make them want to buy from you more when you shift it from them thinking you're selling them something to all of a sudden changing that dynamic to make them think they're buying from you.
All right, now that's an interesting point. I'd like to glom onto that, Peter, if I can, for just a minute, because a lot of people hear the sound of your voice, they'll go, yeah, that's what I do. But in reality, they're not. They're selling too hard. So what are some of the signs that you're selling too hard and you need to maybe be pre-qualifying or disqualifying that customer a little bit more?
Well, the most common sign is they've already said they want to buy and you're still selling. You're still giving them features. You're still giving them benefits. As soon as someone says, all right, I'm in, it works, move on, get onto the transaction. I think that's the first sign. The second sign is you're not asking enough questions. If you are talking too much in that one-on-one sales environment, there's a pretty good chance you're overselling what you're doing. In fact, the more you listen, the more likely you are to shift that dynamic. There's a really good filter for thinking about this, Bill, and it's understanding what's called social identity. And put really simply and out of the psychology, it means this. Everyone gets out of bed in the morning and asks themselves three questions. One, what do I think of me? Two, what do others think of me? And three, what do I want other people to think of me? And what you find from that research is that people don't buy from people they like necessarily. They buy from people they want to be like. So when you're in their office, part of the way you get them coming towards you is you start highlighting some of the things that it's quite obvious that they are interested in. So if they're talking about achievements, then make sure you're elevating your success. If they're talking about their local church and a charity, given Easter's coming up, maybe you're talking about character and the causes you get behind.
All right. We're talking to Peter Sheehan, everybody, author of the book, Making It Happen, Turning Good Ideas into Great Results. And Peter, you said something in that last answer which was remarkable and somewhat counterintuitive, because most of us are taught in sales that people buy from people they like. You've turned that on their ear. Repeat that again for my listeners, and if you will, please dive into that just a little bit deeper.
So what drives all human motivation, or what drives all human activity, is a concept called dissonance. It's a gap between where they are now and where they want to be. They buy product. They attach themselves to brands. They become part of communities. They live in suburbs that say something about who they are. In other words, it's the aspiration between how people currently see them and how we want them to see us. And therefore, when buying from someone, if that person can represent themselves as that future aspiration, as something they want to be like, they're going to be attracted to doing business with that person. It's called social identity theory. And it takes buying from people we like to the next level. It's not buying from people we like. It's buying from people we would like to be like.
And that's an incredible differentiation. Peter, we're talking to Peter Sheehan, author of the book Making It Happen. Peter, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Making It Happen?
I don't want them to take anything away. I want them to go and do stuff as a result. I personally got so sick of reading books that told me to stand in front of the mirror and say, I love you, I love you, I love you, you know. And at some point I said, once I've got the confidence, how do I execute? And I think any early stage entrepreneur, any existing business owner, any socialpreneur can pick this book up and find multiple strategies that are going to help them get greater return for the investment they're putting in. Because I'm a firm believer that not just the U.S., but in fact the world needs some risk takers right now. It needs some people who are going to kind of ante up and bring new ideas to the marketplace. And I want to make sure that people who take those risks are rewarded for their effort.
That's very good. We're talking to Peter Sheehan, everybody, the author of the book Making It Happen, Turning Good Ideas into Great Results. Peter, real quickly, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Two choices. PeterSheehan.com. That's PeterSheehan. Or MakingItHappenBook.com.
Thank you, Peter. It's been a delight. Thank you for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.